Okay, I think we're good, and our recording bot's here. All right. Hey, everyone, welcome back to the QS Cast. I am Tarkan, and joining me today, as we discussed in Discord, is Jordan Pollock. Jordan is a former MTG eBay seller. Are you former MTG eBay seller, or do you still sell on eBay, Jordan?
I still do a little bit here and there, but mostly in person. Actually, I prefer the one to one.
Okay. Well, Jordan used to sell on eBay, maybe sometimes sold dabbles with it, but he is now a full-time tax accountant. So Jordan is going to talk us through the new, obviously the new state tax legislation that came through from the Supreme Court. There was a ton of discord, so we thought it prudent to bring someone on as soon as possible to kind of clarify and make sure everybody understands how this is going to impact the community and the market and whatnot. So at the end of the cast, after Jordan kind of just walks us through everything, we'll take questions. So if any of you guys, if anyone has questions, you can kind of pop them through. I would ask that you just wait till the end so that I can catch them all. So we don't have to do a lot of scrolling up or anything like that. But as usual, you guys can chat along. And if there's points that are made that you want to recall or that you want to, make sure that we revert back to, then you can go ahead and mention it in the QS Cast chat room. All right, Jordan. So I'm going to kind of step back here and kind of let you take the floor and kind of explain everything. Maybe you can talk about what sort of led to this decision and what exactly it is.
Sure. So this all started way, way back. I know many of us were there for it, but in 1992, the first Supreme Court case was called Quill against South Dakota. And I'm going to try not to get into too much tax law or anything like that to bore you guys. But basically, the reason that this came up was because companies were ordering things off of those mail order catalogs. So if you guys remember, you used to get like a little catalog in the mail. You used to, place an order or whatever, put in your name, maybe credit cards if they had it, or just send a check in through the mail order. And then that company would fill your order. On that order, they wouldn't have to charge sales tax. So that's kind of where this all came in, was because that original Supreme Court ruling basically said, look, this is only a small percentage of your sales, so we're not going to force you to charge sales tax. That all has changed, obviously, because in 2018 was the first year that the gross domestic product of internet sales, which is the total internet sales, has actually just surpassed total retail sales in the US. So put together everything that's sold on the internet, and that is greater than everything that was sold retail. So we're definitely seeing a shift of way more business online. More people are just sitting on their couch, ordering stuff on Amazon. I'm sure you guys are aware of stuff like that. So what basically in 1992, that law is now being overruled. And this is all brand new stuff. So this just happened this week. So there's not really like a new law, so to speak. This is more of just the Supreme Court overturning it. And now it's on to the states to make their own decisions as far as whether they want to use this, whether they don't want to use it. But this is all brand new stuff. And just to give you guys like a little timeline, this isn't something that like is going to happen overnight. So, I use the example of like, let's say you forget something for your dinner and you run to the grocery store and you got it, no problem. It's, on your plate in 5, 10 minutes. Like, this is government laws. These take months, if not years, to enact. There's just a lot of red tape. There's a lot of government bureaucracy and all that bullshit. So be patient with this. But for right now, I don't want everyone to freak out and lose their mind. Obviously, us here, we're gonna help you through it. That's pretty much it as far as what the law goes. The next thing I wanted to talk about was as far as Nexus goes. So if you're not familiar with what Nexus is, basically it's if you have a physical presence in that state. Then what would happen with this new law when this goes into effect in your state is then they could say that you have Nexus in any state that you do business in. So if I ship something from Illinois, where I'm in, to Wisconsin, I would then have Nexus in Wisconsin. What that means is that means that I also have to collect and remit sales tax to the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. Now, obviously, as you guys know, it is a pain. I deal with it all the time. My job, it's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of hassle. All of the states and their Department of Revenues are very different. They all have different filing requirements. Some require you to file monthly, quarterly. Some require you to file annually, but you have to pay them monthly. It's a huge headache that I'm sure nobody wants to deal with. So basically, with this nexus, this also could mean that if you sell things at a travel event, that could generate nexus. So for anybody that's like traveling to a Comic-Con, that could generate nexus for you. Even just shipping a single card when you're at a buddy's house could consider you as having nexus in that state. So if I'm in Illinois and I drive to my friend's house in Indiana, let's say I have to ship a card from Indiana back to Illinois, I would then have a nexus in Indiana as well. So I'm going to try not to, you know, get too complex with you guys, but basically what that means is there's just a lot more states that you could be required to file and have paperwork in.
You say could be required. So how can you clarify? Because okay, you say I'm in Illinois. I run over the state border. I ship card back. So I could have nexus. But realistically, will I? Will I be charged state sales tax? That's the first big question I think on everybody's mind.
Sure. So you're right. I probably should take a step back. So first off, it would depend on each state. Each state is very different, and they all are still yet to come out with their own laws as far as the sales tax nexus goes. So right now, there's not like a number one state that says we're doing it this way. And once that happens, all the states will usually follow suit. So the difference is these are state laws, not a federal law. So that's why it's going to take some time for this to get enacted in all of your states.
And then the first comment here that's a good one is that nexus based on volume and not just like if I sell a $5 card, that's not going to matter, right? Is there a volume sort of threshold?
Sure. So the volume threshold actually matters on where you're selling it. So the two things that I was going to talk about was selling on TCG Player and selling on eBay. So each of the different websites or the affiliates that you're selling them on, they do have different thresholds as far as reporting goes. Obviously, that is the number one question. But, you know, right now, if you're just selling it like on your own, like peer to peer. So if I ship something to Indiana and it's just one single card, no, you wouldn't have to charge sales tax because nobody's really going to catch you. So is the answer, or do you have to do it right now? No. Could a law come into place and say, do you have to collect and remit that sales tax? Possibly. So I know it's not, you know, exactly the answer you're looking for, but that's where the law stands right now.
So the question is, it's a gray area right now. They haven't determined what those volume threat, if there's going to be a volume threshold, right? Like state A could say, okay, with, you know, we're now able to take sales tax anywhere outside the state. And we're going to have no volume threshold. Is that correct? Or is there going to be a baseline volume threshold?
So there definitely will be a baseline threshold. It's going to depend on two things. It's going to depend on the amount of gross sales and or the number of actual transactions that occurred. So like, for example, with TCG Player, you'll notice that you won't get what's called a form 1099-K, which is the tax form, unless you have at least $20,000 in gross sales, or you create 200 separate transactions within TCG Player. That's kind of when they classify you as a business, and that's when they generate this tax form. Once they generate that tax form, that's, you know, what should signal in your mind something needs to happen. And that something means, you know, hey, I have a business. I need to start doing some filings. I need to get in touch with Jordan or your CPA, whoever that might be.
Okay, so currently I'm on TCG Player or eBay. I'm selling. Don't have to worry about this, right? Don't have to worry about thresholds. Once this goes through, Then once I hit 20,000 on TCG Player, they're going to say, okay, you're now getting flagged as a business and for tax collection purposes. But is it possible that before 20,000, some states will require tax collection, and then therefore, I guess once you're flagged by TCG Player, then it'll sort of retroactively go back to your previous sales for other states?
I know that's a funky question, but I'm wondering if there's going to be any thresholds that are under 20K, if that's going to affect, you know, what you have to pay once you're flagged by a TV player.
Sure. So the answer to your question is it depends. The TCG player form that they would be creating is a federal form. So that would go to the IRS. The difference is sales tax, which is what we're talking about, is all regulated by the state. So is the IRS going to be in talks or in cahoots with the state? The answer is probably not. But these are still things that, you know, you should be aware of once you start, you know, generating more revenue through eBay, TCG player, or whatever avenue you use.
Is there a precedent for what we can expect those thresholds to be, or is it literally up in the air and we can say, yeah.
I would say that, you know, we should be looking at probably a little bit less than 20,000 in gross sales. Like I know that usually the IRS will flag certain bank accounts if you have transactions over 10,000 or more. So if a single transaction is over 10,000, that could be an item that is flagged. I would say that that's probably a good unit of measurement as far as the number of separate payments, you know, cause you could have one payment that's over 20 grand. I would say that they're looking at it on an annual basis. So the 200 separate payments for TCG player, or 200 separate transactions is probably relevant. You know, that they're not going to flag somebody that's doing, you know, 10 to 20 sales a year.
Got it. Okay. So how is that going to work then, as far as is TCG player going to reach out to you? Are you going to be responsible for this, for just remembering it and keeping up with it?
Sure. So yes, in the future, if whatever the law looks like, it would be your responsibility to what's called collect and remit sales tax. So what that means is, I'll use an example. If we sell a card for $10, you have to collect, let's say in Illinois, your sales tax rate is 10%. You'd have to collect $11 from that person. That $11, $10 goes in your pocket, and the extra dollar gets remitted to Illinois. So the way that works is that $1 would need to get submitted onto a form, and that gets sent back to Illinois.
Okay. There's a comment here about who's going to be responsible for, you know, making these requirements onto the sellers. So, and I know a lot of people are curious. So who's going to, like, is TCG player going to tell you, or are you going to have to shoulder this yourself and be responsible for it yourself?
Sure. So that's kind of the gray area as far as who's going to tell you to do it, because in general, no one likes in life saying, hey, you have to pay taxes. Hey, you have to do this. Right now, TCG player does have nexus in the following states. So TCG player has nexus, which means they charge sales tax, or they collect it on your behalf, in the states that are Connecticut, Georgia, Illinois, Minnesota, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, South Carolina, and Virginia. So right now, if you have any sales in that area, TCG player will collect sales tax for you. So that's kind of where the law is started. And eBay has nexus in a lot of those states, plus way more. I think eBay was closer to about 45 states. So, but as far as, are they going to require you to do it? It would be more something that, like, on your, that you would have to add a line item that says you also owe me X amount of money in sales tax.
So, and again, I'm really naive to how the sales tax process works, but is this something where people will need to start just simply charging sales tax on the sale just to cover it? Or again, they don't need to worry about that until they reach a certain point, at which point then they're going to have to add sales tax into their like fees and pricing.
Right. So yes, it should just be something that's in the back of their mind. Obviously, you know, people should know their level of business, and, you know, it should kind of generate a light bulb in their head. Hey, is this more of a business or is this just a hobby that I do for a couple hours on the weekend? You know, if it is a business, this is something that people should be tracking, and people should be doing. You know, is this something that, are you going to get in trouble for not doing it? The answer is no, but not right now. Maybe something could change in the future. So right now, the way that it works is, if I sell something I'll use the same example, from Illinois to Wisconsin, and I don't charge sales tax, that person who is receiving that item in Wisconsin is supposed to pay what's called use tax, which is kind of like the other side of sales tax. Basically what that is that's saying, hey, I purchased an item from somebody who didn't collect sales tax, but because I am the end user of this item, I then have to pay use tax. The thing about use tax is it's not regulated at all and nobody pays it, which is why none of you guys have probably ever heard of it. But it is something that people should be responsible for. And I've been through use tax audits and they're a pain.
So we have a comment here. Jay Tipkins says it's states will hold sites like TCG as liable for missing sales tax. Can you comment on that? Do you think that that's true?
Yeah, so the difference is who the government's going to go after. Are they going to go after these thousand little fish on the ground, or are they going to go after the one big fish, which would be, you know, like a eBay or Etsy or a TCG player? The problem is they would go after TCG player first. The question is TCG player then going to pass on that quote-unquote legal fee or whatever in some sort of admin fee? So I definitely think that the bottom line of this is you're going to see that either fee or whatever, you know, shipping fee or PayPal fee you have go up just because of their legal woes. So they're going to have legal problems, which means they have more admin costs, which means that cost gets passed on to you guys.
So I think that's the number one thing everyone was curious was, well, how is this going to affect pricing and my fees? And more than likely, Jordan, you're going to see some kind of increase in fees to account for that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, unfortunately, that is the case. You know, even just, you know, a company like TCG Player ramping up the amount of money that they're spending in legal fees, you know, or in, you know, trying to understand this tax law, you know, this is not something that's cheap that you can go out and hire like a, you know, $8 or $10 an hour grocery bag worker. You know, these are very, very important tax attorneys, CPAs, who are really going to dig into when these new laws start coming out for all of these states.
And to go back to your first point, that said, this is not something that people should, you know, be getting too paranoid or scared about right now, correct?
Correct. Right. So obviously the reason that we're having this conversation now is because it's all brand new and there's a lot of information out there that people have questions for, but there aren't answers. So, you know, to quote my friend Jeff Hoogland, I would rather present the answer than or present the question and then maybe you have the answer. Whereas obviously with something like this, it's not that case. You know, I would much rather give you an answer if there was one. But because this is all brand new, you know, we're kind of going at this as we see. And you'll see that, you know, when you jump on like Google or Yahoo and you type in these questions, all of these websites are very, very general. They just don't have specific answers to your questions. You know, I was reading on Wall Street Journal this morning, you know, like I do every day, that was talking about this, and it said, quote unquote, exactly what the Supreme Court said. So there's not a lot of rules and jurisdiction on this yet.
Awesome. So I'm trying to think how to put this. So we were talking about the threshold, but apparently the original announcement said that there was already a set threshold of like 100K, but now you're saying that that could, or well, I don't know if that's actually the case. I'm trying to understand where that 100K plays into the states kind of determining and setting their own thresholds.
Sure. So the 100K number that you're looking at was part of that Supreme Court decision. The problem is the states can overrule it or they can make their own case and they can make their own precedent. So this is kind of more of like the door is now open and now the states are going to interpret it and do whatever they want. And, you know, like I said, each state is going to be very, very different. You know, and even something like shipping. I mean, some states could come out and say, hey, you now need to charge sales tax on shipping. You know, so that is usually a good place that people save on fees, you know, because you list something on eBay for $5 with free shipping, and then you have to pay for the cost of shipping, right? That stamp you have to pay for. Now they could say, hey, you also have to pay sales tax on that stamp, which would suck.
And I guess there's no precedent as far as what we can expect the states, or how we can expect the states to approach this, or is there some legislation elsewhere that kind of can give us an idea of what we expect from that?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, keep in mind the internet itself is all rather new, and there's not a lot of laws around this. So there's not a lot of precedent that we can refer to. The problem is we think of the internet as, oh, it's been there for whatever. But because the government and their laws are so slow in adapting all of these things, I mean, this isn't a new issue. You know, this has been going on. People have been selling stuff online for many, many years, 3, 5, 10 years down the road, you know, that you guys have been operating this business. Why did this come up now? You know, but that's because this case has been in the Supreme Court for 2 years. So, you know, they took forever just deciding this. And that was in South Dakota, where like nobody lives. I don't know if any of you guys are from South Dakota, but I'm not.
To anybody that lives in South Dakota that's listening, we love you. Don't worry.
Right. I mean, have you ever met someone that lives in South Dakota? I haven't.
I can't recall anybody that I have met from South Dakota.
Right.
Actually.
Right.
I have to admit though, I do want to visit the Dakotas because they look beautiful. But
yeah, I mean, I could tell you where it is on a map, but like. anyway, so the other thing that I kind of wanted to talk about was in the sales tax realm, I also wanted to talk about the different states and kind of adapt to you guys as the listeners and talk to you guys about two like really important things. So the first thing is if you live in a state with no income tax, and the second is if you live in a state without sales tax, and what that kind of means for you now as far as your life goes. So states with no income tax are states that you should be living in if you have a high income or if you can work remotely. Also, if you are like a good money saver, so if you're doing something like maximizing your 401k, putting money into your HSA, then these are the states for you. No income tax, which is Alaska, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, oh boy, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming. And then New Hampshire and Tennessee also have no income tax, but they do tax investment income. So things like interest income, dividend income, any other investments that you're a part of, things like that. The other thing is if you live in a state like that, it's usually offset. So the states get their money or their revenue with like higher property taxes, which don't worry, if you're renting, you're still paying property taxes. The difference is your landlord is just passing off that cost onto you. So that's kind of the first thing that I wanted you guys to be aware of, which I'm sure you guys will see as you guys go and file your tax return. You know, you could go in, ask your CPA and say, hey, why am I not filing a Texas tax return? And they would say, oh, well, Texas doesn't have an income tax, so you don't have to file.
Cool.
So,
sales tax.
Yeah. And the other one was sales tax. So any states with no sales tax are places that you should live in if you're like a really, really high consumer. So if you buy a lot of goods in your state, you know, and this is also good. So like when you're traveling and you're going to events, these are things to know that, you know, maybe you're like, hey, I'm going to pack a sandwich instead of going and buying this, you know, $15 hamburger from the state of Louisiana, because Louisiana has a really high sales tax. So just that example. And also when I say like a really high consumer, I don't really mean like, do you buy your toilet paper from like the local Walmart or do you order online? Cause like the sales tax difference there is going to be very, very minuscule, if almost immaterial. You know, this is like a bigger grandeur scale. So this is something like if you have a business, do you want to pick up and move your business to a place that doesn't have sales tax? So like something like a grocery store, you know, let's say you own an investment in a grocery store. Do you want that grocery store to be in a state with higher sales tax or in a state with no sales tax? Obviously you'd want it in the state with no sales tax, because that's going to attract people to come into your grocery store and buy more things. So, you know, in general, if a family comes in, let's say they've got $50 to spend on groceries, they're going to spend that $50, right? Okay, well, if your state has sales tax, now you only get, whatever, $44 worth of groceries, and then you have to pay $6 worth of tax. So the grocery store doesn't make as much profit because they have to collect and remit that sales tax.
And do you happen to have that list of states?
For sales tax?
Yeah.
Yes. So let's see. Sales tax. I wrote this down. Okay. So sales tax is Alaska, Delaware, Montana, Oregon, New Hampshire, and parts of Tennessee. Really weird that it's parts of Tennessee, but it actually is. The other thing that I wanted to mention was as far as states with sales tax, There's actually a really good website. If you guys want to write this down, it's called taxjar.com. It's just TAXJAR.com. And the website is just taxjar.com/states. It's a really good website to kind of see if you do have sales or you are responsible for sales tax in certain states. You can kind of like click on the different states and see what their laws are as of today. So I think it's a good website. I use it a lot with my clients because they are, you know, in the multiple transaction area. So they're shipping a lot, or maybe they have Nexus in 3 or 4 different states, and you have to file that sales tax return, let's say, every month or every quarter in all those states. So this website's a good place to get started. You can also link your sales to this website. So like, you know, if you have sales on eBay, you can link it through there and it'll pop up and say, hey, you ship something to Wisconsin. Do you have Nexus in Wisconsin? And it'll ask you that question. And if so, you are responsible for sales tax. So hopefully you charge sales tax on your item. If not, you are responsible for it. It could come out of your pocket.
Awesome. That's actually quite interesting. I didn't realize it was a site that you could actually link your your accounts to so that you could manage that or at least see what you would owe. And does that track each individual? Is there a way to connect it so that it can recognize each individual sale as far as where, you know, where it was bought from? Through the seller portal or the online e-commerce platform?
Yeah, so it definitely does. The problem is the number of local jurisdictions. I'm going to try not to get too complex, but there's over 10,000 local jurisdictions in the United States. This website, it does do a decent job of tracking the state sales tax, but in addition to state sales tax, you also pay what's called local sales tax. So the next time you like go to a restaurant or a grocery store, look at your receipt. You'll see a state sales tax and a local sales tax. This website, it just doesn't exactly do the best job of capturing all of that local sales tax. So for the most part, most local sales tax is like under 1%. So we're not talking about a lot of money, but it's, you know, it could be the difference of, hey, I collected $5 from this sale that I did, but now I owe $6 in sales tax. Okay, well, that extra dollar you're actually responsible for, and you'd have to pull that out of your pocket, which sucks.
But for the interest of this topic, ideally, this website would, you know, begin tracking based on the new laws as far as if I'm, you know, selling to, if I'm in Florida and I'm selling to Illinois, what I would have to collect on all of my sales to Illinois.
Correct. Right. So, I mean, obviously, a lot of the new laws haven't been passed yet. So I'm not sure how up to date, you know, it will be in the future. But, you know, as of today, and as of this month, I use it for a multitude of my clients. It's very, very good. If you guys have any businesses that you guys are like using QuickBooks with, which I use all the time, it integrates also very well with QuickBooks. It's a good website to check out.
As far as what people can expect this rate to be like, obviously it can vary by state, but is there a general rule? Is 10% basically what people can assume will end up likely being the case for the most part?
It's a good question. I definitely think that if this law is implemented, you're going to see a different kind of sales tax rate. So like, for example, where I live in sales tax rate, it's like 9.5%. So I would think that as an internet sale, they're going to start off the threshold and that rate at a lower percentage because they're just trying to get people on board and they're trying to get everyone to do it. You know, remember guys, this is costing the state billions of dollars a year by not collecting sales tax. So the reason that this came up from South Dakota, if I didn't mention it before, was because they just want a piece of the action. You know, there's more people that live in California than there are in South Dakota. South Dakota wants a piece of that revenue. But I would say in general, sales tax, it'll probably come out at probably somewhere around 5 to 7%. So less than the amount of the actual sales tax, but also depends on the area. So like in LA County, your sales tax is 12%. It's 8.25% for California. And then LA County tax is just 3.75. So it's a good chunk.
Got it. We had a quick comment here from Cardbreaker talking about how this is, and you mentioned this earlier, Jordan, that this really won't affect the small-time hobbyist. They can almost ignore this because they will likely, I mean, we can anticipate there's going to be real thresholds set that are for enterprise or business-type entities, not just the guy selling his cards on the weekend from, you know, from his house at home doing, you know, a few hundred bucks here and there.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, so this isn't something that, because it's not going to apply to a lot of you. Now, if you want to be in compliance, that's more of just a threshold level. You know, that doesn't mean that you still shouldn't go out and do it. You know, so if you are already collecting and remitting sales tax, you're not really doing anything wrong. In fact, you're doing something right. It's more just a question of, are you going to get caught? Which, you know, as a wise man once told me, nothing's illegal until you get caught. It's not the answer you want to hear, but it's pretty much true.
And another couple good points here. The first was, there was a delineation, I believe, in the announcement that was made, that it was X number of sales or sales price, you know, sales amount threshold. So either I do 200 sales or I do 100,000. Is that correct? So let's say I do, you know, 200 sales or 201 sales, but I only did, they were $10,000 in total. Do I still get hit with sales tax?
Sure. So it's a good question. It's actually the opposite of what everyone thinks. Usually it's both. It's not just like, let's say, 20 grand in gross sales or 200 separate transactions like on TCG Player. The reason that it's and or both, not like an or, is because what if somebody like goes on eBay and they sell a car and they sell their car for, let's say, 25 grand. You know, is that person responsible for collecting sales tax on one item? Maybe not, but maybe so, because it's a bigger car. Now, does that person have to sell 200 cars in order to collect and remit sales tax? Well, no, but that would be something that like eBay or a TCG player would flag, and they would say, hey, this is over their threshold limit, whatever that limit is that they come up with, you are responsible for collecting sales tax. And then to take it a step further, eBay could submit that invoice that you had to your state Department of Revenue. And then you would get a love letter, or you would get a not nice letter from your state that says, hey, I saw that you sold a car for 25 grand. Where's my sales tax, you know, for whatever, $200, $300, whatever their rate is.
And the states will determine both of those numbers, and it will not be an or situation.
Correct.
It will be and, right?
And.
Is it, just to clarify. So yeah. you will have to
Correct.
Do, we'll just pick an arbitrary state, Alabama. Alabama says you have to do 200 sales, and in total, those 200 sales have to be a minimum of 20K, we'll just say.
Correct.
Okay. That's important. That's a very important distinction. So I mean,
yeah, definitely.
There's a lot of conditions here that are going to, you know, put, you know, make you liable, right? You have to do a lot of sales, and you're going to have to hit 20 or whatever the number ends up being per state. And is there, with that, is there a precedent for that? Jordan, can, you know, are there going to be some states that are like, haha, we're going to be the kid on the corner and make, you know, it's only going to be 10 sales and, you know, 5 grand? Or can we expect that most states will probably, you know, play with each other and set around the same thresholds?
Yeah, it's a good question. The problem is, they could say that every state's going to be the same, but every state I know will be different just because of how their government is run. Some states are in a deficit, some states are in a surplus. You know, so if you look at a state like Illinois, we have no budget for whatever reason. We're spending more money than our revenue is earning, so our state is not in a good place. But if you look at a state like Colorado, maybe it's because they legalized marijuana and they've had a lot more marijuana revenue, but they're budget is in surplus. They have more money than they know what to do with. So it would really depend on that. You know, does the state need more money? You know, then they would lower the threshold. Does the state not need as much money? Well, then they might not have a threshold at all.
Got it. Interesting. Okay. I think though it's more than likely you can expect that there's probably going to be, well, we hope, a reasonable threshold across the board. It won't be flat, but I would say that it's probably going to be outlier cases where there's a state that has a really, really bizarre threshold. But they're probably all going to be business level, you know, what you could expect. So 200 sales and we'll say 50 to 100,000 in total value of those sales. So that's a really very important distinction for people here because, okay, let's just say I'm doing $30,000 a month in TCG sales. Well, if I'm doing $30,000 a month, but they're split across all over the place, right? If I'm not meeting the volume threshold and the sales total threshold, then I'm not going to have to worry about this, right? So it sounds like the more and more we're talking about this, Jordan, it sounds like this is really mostly relevant to like power sellers, like, you know, we'll say Channel Fireball is selling on eBay and TCG Player, which they do. This is probably really going to impact them as opposed to the folks here. I mean, it's you got to be really doing a ton of volume in one state for it to really impact you. Is that kind of correct?
Yeah, so it is. The difference is that's how it is now. They're very easily could pass a law that says that they're trying to hit individuals because of the total, you know, of all of the revenue from all of these businesses and all these online sales, the majority of them are little individuals like us. So it doesn't seem like we would make up a lot of money. You know, it seemed like Channel Fireball would just outpace all of us, which they might be. But in this case of online sales, they also do most of their revenue either in their store or at events. And at those events or in their store is a place that they already have Nexus. Those places, they're already charging sales tax.
Got it. Okay.
So the next thing is I kind of want to pivot it to how this is going to affect the market. So I'm going to look at it from like a more macroeconomic scale. So I actually think that this is going to cause higher prices for online shopping. It's also going to mean extra revenue for the states if this does go into effect, obviously. We're also going to see higher admin fees, which I talked about, you know, higher legal fees, you know, higher eBay fees, TCG player. But, you know, it kind of makes sense. I mean, why would I buy, let's say, a box of Dominaria for $100 plus $10 in sales tax when I can buy it online for $100 flat? Well, of course, you're not going to buy it from your LGF because you don't want to spend $110. You know, don't you think that stores would rather charge you just $100 and then also sell you maybe a single card for $10? Of course they would, you know, but $110 is $110. If you're going to spend that money anyway, this way the store would get the money. So I actually think that this is going to cause more people to want to shop retail instead of going online. So this is actually going to give retailers, going to give them a little bit of an edge, and it's going to make them on a level playing field.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest talking points through social media was that, I mean, how long have we had online sellers had somewhat of an unfair advantage to retail? And it's been affecting retail, right? I mean, in this community, obviously in our community, Magic, we see it all too clear with, you know, sealed boxes almost exclusively moving to online sales as opposed to, you know, stores just barely being able to scrape by just to sell any. And so hopefully now something like this will shift some of that purchasing back into the stores, which ultimately is a good thing for the market. As far as the, you know, when you say macroeconomics for the secondary market in general, do you think all this is going to end up, like, let's, you know, TCG player raise their fees by, we'll say, 1% or 2% or whatnot. Do you think ultimately it's going to be enough to spill over into the secondary market in general, where card prices and product prices will just kind of creep up slightly?
It's interesting. I actually think it would be more the opposite. So the reason that if you look at like a graph that shows supply and demand and pricing, usually the price of a card will go up if it outticks that supply and or that demand. That's kind of what causes a price to go up. What causes it to go down is the opposite. So maybe it has more supply or maybe it has less demand. So in that example, if less people are buying things online, I actually think it's going to depress the price of things. It's going to bring down the price of everything. It's going to bring down the price of single product. It's going to bring down the price of all of your singles because less people are willing to go out and spend money. They're going to be saving money more often. And when they do go out and spend money, they're going to want a bigger bang for their buck. You know, so whereas before that $100, if it's going to buy you one sealed product, now stores are going to be like, well, if you really want my $100, now I'm going to give you a $80 sealed product box plus $20 in singles.
Right. So people typically buy online because it's cheaper or it's available, right? It's usually less convenient because they just go to their store and get it, but typically their store doesn't have everything that they want and it's always cheaper online, right? So
right.
If you still can't find it in your store, I guess the argument then becomes, and this is a kind of a different topic for another time, but, you know, okay, well, will cards then shift more to being in the hands of the stores, which will then move everybody back in the stores, which will kind of keep prices where they're at, or are the cards still going to be on, you know, you can find anything you want online. So the ease hasn't changed. The ease of acquiring cards online hasn't changed. So therefore, the prices, yeah, they might go down, but they're still being bought a lot online because you always get what you want online. So maybe there's an equilibrium that's sort of found.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And, you know, in general, the market will always hit that equilibrium. The question is, are more people going to be afraid of this sales tax law, or are they going to embrace it? You know, is this going to cause more of your backpack businesses to go out of business, or is it going to cause more people to get into the market and try and do this more?
So I think that comes down, from what I can tell from this conversation talk, I think that's going to come down to what the states ultimately decide these thresholds are, right? If the state says 200 sales and $100,000, that's not going to affect most 90%, hell, 95% of online magic sellers, right? Because nobody's doing, well, I should say nobody, but very few people are doing that many sales in a single state. Everybody's sort of, the wealth is spread for the most part, right? The sales are spread out all over the place. That to me is the biggest thing here. And I think that's basically the correct assumption, right? Is to see what those thresholds are going to end up being.
Yeah, correct. And, you know, this is kind of something that is in the murky water. You know, I mean, I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but people need to understand that there is a chain of command in the government. And it is very, very long. I mean, it's from the very bottom of the people who are interns who are, you know, trying to write this legal mumbo jumbo all the way up to the states, all the way up to the federal level, all the way up to your president. You know, and after it passes through the House and the Senate and committees like the Ways and Means Committee, then it finally goes to the president who signs it into office. You know, so this isn't something that's just going to happen overnight.
So this is great. We have Phil who says that he is meeting those arbitrary thresholds we kind of threw out there of 200 sales in these different states. But Phil, to your point, it would be 200 sales and $100,000. It's not just 200 sales. It's not or, which is something we clarified earlier in the conversation. So that's a very important takeaway. So I think then to sum up the most salient points for the audience and the listeners, one, it's going to come down to thresholds, which are dependent on each other. So you have to do 200, you have to do X number of sales, and those sales need to have a total sale amount, which we don't know what those are yet. And some states could choose to really be far off from everybody else. But ideally, this is going to be in the several hundred, couple hundred sales and in the six figures total sale value. So that's very important. Secondly, this is going to affect the large platforms as far as them having to assume some costs to even deal with managing this. Therefore, it is safe to assume that those costs are going to get passed down to the seller and therefore to the consumer in the form of likely higher fees. So we can anticipate that once this really gets into effect, probably see an uptick somewhere in fees. That's important. And then the third takeaway from this is that it will be incumbent on the sellers, not on the platforms, to collect this. It will come down to each individual person. And if you're underneath these thresholds, you don't have to worry about this. So if you're just a backpacker or guys doing this as a hobby on the weekend, this isn't really going to affect you, except in the form of these higher fees that we'll probably see. And the last thing is that it's going to take a very long time for this to happen and to really be put into effect. Jordan, you're saying you probably anticipate up to what? It could be even 24 months before we see the effects of this?
Yeah, I mean, as far as precedence goes, I would kind of look at what's going on with the gambling laws. So as far as like online gambling, you know, that's something that's kind of very similar to this, whereas it is now legal to gamble and bet online, but only one state, which is New Jersey, has actually passed a law and they've started doing it. And that was over a year ago. So, you know, for one state to finally become active in this, and it's taken them 12 months. Yeah, I would say a good
Jordan,
timeline is somewhere
midnight,
in the, you know, 1 to 3 to 4 year.
Is it safe to assume that the platforms will build in some sort of option to charge that tax into the checkout system?
Yes.
Or, you know, what do you think the likelihood of that is?
Yeah, so actually eBay has already started to do that because eBay has Nexus in 45 states. So whether that means they have a physical location, maybe they have a warehouse, you know, it could even be they've just got a sales rep that's in Kansas. And if they do, they have Nexus in Kansas. So eBay, actually, you can already do that. The problem is eBay is a little unique because you can only enter one tax rate for each state. So if you enter, let's say, 6% onto the Illinois state tax return, and then you end up going to file and you owe 7% because let's say the extra 1% is for like a local county that you're doing tax in, you'd have to pay that out of pocket. But right now, you know, I would love for everybody just to log into their eBay account. It's really easy. All you got to do is just go to, at the top, you'll go to account, and then there's another button called site preferences. And then the next button is called payment from buyers. And there's actually a good sales tax table that you can use. And you can check the box for also charging sales tax on shipping and handling if your state says that you have to. But I would definitely do that on eBay now. So right now you guys are probably only have Nexus in the state that you guys are living. But that's definitely what I would do, you know, to start
awesome.
Looking into that.
Awesome. Any other points you want to make before we kind of open it up for questions?
Yeah. So the other thing is, you know, this is a lot of legal mumbo jumbo. So I want you guys, don't be afraid to pick up the phone and call your state Department of Revenue. You know, I do it daily, not because it's my job, but even just because I'm asking very basic questions. Sometimes it's just, where is this on your website? You know, that's kind of what they're there for and their helpline is there for. Those people are very knowledgeable about their state and about what laws you have to follow. And trust me, they would rather hear from you than them sending you a letter saying you did this wrong. You know, now we're going to send you a bill, or now you have to pay interest and penalty or whatever. So that, you know, it all helps with that open communication, you know, and same with if you have a business, you know, are you going to go out and do this on your own? No, this is way too complicated. It's way too complicated for me. That's why I had to go out and get certified, you know, call up your CPA or, you know, you can send me a message. Send me a message on Twitter is where I'm very active. And I'll
question
you.
From Sean Johnson, is it advisable to get tax info from the state in writing?
Sure. So you'll definitely always be responding to them when you actually have to register for sales tax. So it's not just something that you can just go and say, I'm going to charge somebody an extra $7 and then send it to the state. No, you actually have to go through paperwork, do the registration for the states, and then they send you paperwork back that says, congratulations, you've been accepted. You can now do business in South Dakota. Once you get that letter, it also usually has an online website that you can go online, register your business, and you can do it then. But usually they'll always respond via writing. These sorts of, you know, government agencies are never going to like send you a text message or, you know, send you an email. You know, most of these things are all kind of always through the mail.
Cool. Okay. All right, everyone. We're going to go ahead and open it up for questions. Any questions you have for Jordan? Obviously, this is a big topic, so ask away anything, get as nuanced as you like, you know, and he can answer it. So do we have anybody that has any questions? There's been a lot of conversation, so I'm sure there's probably a million questions in people's head.
We're definitely going to get spammed for questions because, you know, know that I'm knowledgeable about the subject, which is fun. I'd love to help. Actually, really funny, Cardbreaker said sales tax number also means you can buy items for resale without paying sales tax, and that would be winning. It's also illegal, but that's okay. Really what he's saying is once you get that sales tax number, it means that you can buy something from somebody and they don't have to charge you sales tax. What that means is that you are not the end user. So that means that you are saying you're kind of like the middleman or the wholesaler, and you are going to sell that item to somebody else and collect sales tax. Now, does it actually happen all the time? Obviously not. You know, if you're doing it for business and you're trying to get it to the end user, then yes, that's fine. But this is more for the people that are, you know, trying to hide it, which hopefully you guys are not.
Okay. All right. And some more people typing here. I want to scroll up and see if there's any comments or questions from earlier. let's see. Not if you do it for your business, right? So that's points to the comment you just made, right, Jordan, about if you're buying items for resale for your business.
Correct. Right. So if I had to guess, Cardbreaker, you're probably buying items either from a wholesaler, and you're either storing that item for you, whether it's for investing or for whatever, but you're not actively trying to sell those items that you are buying to the end user. You're more just saving it just because or for investing. But if you do sell that to the end user, obviously that's for the business, which you're familiar with, then you would have to charge sales tax.
I don't think we can anticipate that the states are going to try and retroactively charge eBay or TCG Player in these online platforms, right? Or go back because they can't hold this. They can't hold the platforms liable for the collection, right?
They definitely won't. I mean, it will be more of the platform's responsibility, which they will end up passing on to the end user. But they're not going to retroactively go back and say, you need to do this for the past 6 months. It'll definitely be more proactive. So once any of these laws, all these states come into play, then you'll get a letter or you'll find out about it. And they'll say, we're going to start doing this as of, let's say, 1/1/2019. So it does give you time to prep and get registered for any sales tax in any of the states that you have to. This isn't just a bomb that they're going to drop on you. This is bigger than that.
Question from Jay Temkin. Do you know how an MTG Patreon income is taxed? Is it a sale if items are given associated with levels of support?
Sure. So I'm going to try and address it. I'm not exactly sure what the second part of the question
Sorry, to
means.
clarify,
So you'll have
when he's
to
saying
just.
each tier on Patreon, you're familiar with Patreon, Jordan? Okay, so let's
Sure.
say if you're a
Yeah.
level one supporter, you get this in return. If you're a level two supporter and you pay more, you get these X things in return. If you're a level three, you get these X things in return. So that's what he's referring to.
Sure. And how much are we talking about going up these levels? Is this as far as
This
money that
is
you're
if I
giving?
get, so let's say you I donate to Jay Temkin's Patreon $5 at tier one, I get this back. I get this, in exchange, or I'm given this. And that $20 I'm given this, and then at $50 I'm given this, and then at $100 I get the grant, I get a ton of stuff in return.
Sure. So, two different people that we're talking about is one is the donee, which would be you that's giving money to Jay Temkin. That would not be any sort of income to you because you're giving more money than you're getting back. So you're not giving him $100 and you're getting back, $150. And on the other side, on Jay Temkin's level, he's actually getting that $100 as a business. He should be recognizing that as income. So that $100 that he's getting from Patreon, that technically is gross income to him. Now, obviously, it's offset by any expenses or anything else that he has. But that $100 that he receives, that should be income to him. So whether he chooses to recognize that on his tax return or not, it's his business.
He says gross, Jay Temkin says gross income, not sales.
Yeah, it's the same thing. When you're looking at a set of financial statements, gross income or gross sales is always at the top line. The reason that I'm putting the word gross in front of it is because it's not subtracted out from any expenses. So if you give him $100 and he gives you, I don't know, let's say $60 in goods, services, gifts, whatever, his true profit is just $40. So that's what he's taxed on.
So it's kind of related to his second question was, is it classified as a sale? Do the Patreon consider these types of support a sale, right? So again, if you donate to my Patreon and I have five levels of support, each with different, donation amounts, and in return for doing so, you get things, are those considered sales?
Yeah, so as far as for sales tax purpose, it's not because those are like services that he is providing to you, whereas most of the sales tax is just on goods. So this is like you go out to the grocery store and you buy a banana, right? But if you're going to a lawyer and the lawyer charges you $200 for their fees, you're not paying sales tax on a fee because that's a service.
Got it. So it's a, it's yeah, so
Did that
they're
answer your
considered
question?
service fees.
Correct. Right. Which in this case it is. So this isn't something that you would have to worry about sales tax about.
Awesome. Sean Johnson, is it realistic that this tax legislation will come to a public vote within the states, or is something like this not something the public really has any control over?
Oh, it's a good question. I would relate back to, did you vote for the president or did you vote for Hillary? I mean, if you voted for Hillary, guess what? She won the popular vote, but she's not president. So, you know, that's kind of where our world is turning into now. Whereas the state, the tax legislation could come to a vote very, very soon. And this isn't exactly something that we're going to have any control over. So there's definitely, you know, people in Washington, D.C. or people in your specific states that are going to be pulling the strings behind this. You know, and some of those people who are in the background, who are pulling strings, guess what? They're going to be like lawyers for eBay, you know, or they're going to be one of eBay's top sellers, which I actually have one of them as a client. They're just an online bookstore. So think of somebody like a Barnes & Noble, but most of their business is online. So they just have huge warehouses, just like Amazon does, and they mostly just deal in books. Maybe a little bit in like CDs, DVDs, you know, but they'll probably gross, I don't know, at least over 300 or 400 million this year. So that they're a decent sized company. But the difference is that those companies are very, very aware of this law. And those companies are the ones that are actively trying to change it or shift it in their favor.
Right. As we mentioned earlier, you know, the individuals or groups that are going to be affected the most by this ostensibly are the large enterprises, right? The people that are doing in serious volume. But as you said, but Jordan made the comment earlier that, hey, that seems true. But in aggregate, all the small guys like us do make up a huge chunk of that GDP. So that online sales GDP. So.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and that's why, you know, if you look at, you know, who the big hitters are in the world. So as far as big companies, obviously you think of Amazon, but, you know, is it because Amazon's just a big company? I mean, not really. Like, how many retail stores do they have? You know, like, when was the last time you walked into an Amazon store? Well, never. I mean, apart from Whole Foods, which they are now a part of. But the reason that Amazon is so big and the reason that they've grown so rapidly is just because they understand shipping. They understand supply chain management, you know, and these are the things that are next level in our business.
Sean Johnson, so you feel that the big companies, we'll say the bookstore from your example, is for these changes because it closes the gap between them and smaller sellers?
It's a good question. I would say that they are actually against this change just because of the amount of paperwork that they're going to have to deal with. So just looking at sales tax, which is a whole nother, you know, industry in and of itself, apart from, you know, payroll and income tax, which is mostly what I deal with. But it's just going to be more fees, more lawyer work, and it's just not something that they want to get involved in. You know, like, this is just another item that they have to add to every single invoice, that they have to charge every single person, you know, and then that person's going to get upset because they bought a book for $10, but their credit card was charged for $11. And they're going to bitch and they're going to complain and they're not going to understand it.
Right.
So, but, you know, as far as the smaller sellers, you know, maybe they will be in favor for this. Maybe like a smaller person, like an LGS, would be in favor of this because I think this is going to drive more business into them. You know, if you can buy that Dominaria box for, you know, $100 and there's sales tax being charged regardless, whether it's your LGS or online, guess what? Most people are going to want to go into their LGS and buy that box from them because they have an emotional connection with the owner or with the employees and they want to support their store. They want to see them succeed. You know, why it doesn't make sense anymore to go online and buy it.
Yes, we chatted earlier about how it would seem that this will ultimately be of benefit to the retail stores and to the LGSs as opposed to hurting them, which should help with the sale product. I agree, Sean. It will hopefully at least alleviate some of the issues that have come up recently with fire selling and some of these online sellers that are just dumping loads of sale product at dirt cheap prices. Hopefully this will kind of act as a somewhat of a balance to that.
Yeah. And, you know, on a separate issue, as far as the sealed product, I know that a lot of stores are getting burned with like all these new like coupons that are coming out from like eBay or TCG Player, you know, that are saying, you know, hey, if you spend $75 on eBay, you get an extra $15 or you get an extra 20%.
Jordan, I can't tell you how much we have a dedicated channel. You put it above the channels just for coupons.
I'm sure.
And I mean, when somebody throws a coupon, they're like, hey guys, eBay, boom. It's just like, I mean, it is on.
It's
on. I mean,
it's gone.
People are buying sealed product left and right. It's crazy. Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, Yeah, so you know, I definitely think that it's super interesting, and it's just now I feel like it's kind of weird because it's causing more and more people to wait on their purchases. You know, so instead of, let's say, spending $100 on a box, let's say every single week, or maybe let's say every 2 days, depending on how often you're drafting or whatever. Now more people are just waiting till the weekend. They're just waiting for that coupon so they can drop their load, you know, or they're just waiting for, you know, TCG player to give a higher kickback. Okay, well, guess what? Then they're going to list their card. They're going to list it as aggressively as possible so they sell their card so they get more kickback into their account.
Yeah, we just had TCGs having a 5% kickback now, actually, and I know people are seeing an uptick in their sales with that. So they definitely have a
Yeah.
huge impact. Okay, any, guys, any other
Yeah,
questions?
and
Any other any anything else for Jordan? This is a really good time. This has been a huge conversation and it illuminated a lot. So I want to make sure everybody has the opportunity to ask anything they're curious about. Okay, Jordan, do you have any kind of closing comments regarding to this topic?
No, you know, I feel like the best place really to find information about this is really, like I said, from your State Department of Revenue. If you want one that's like more national news, you know, I would definitely recommend reading the Wall Street Journal. I'm sure that it sounds boring and none of you guys are going to do it, but it's definitely worth the subscription. There's good tidbits that you can get. There's good learning about business. You know, the world is more than just, you know, the supply and demand curve. It's a lot more complex than that. And you know, I obviously I'm more prejudiced to it because I'm in the industry as well. But in reality, every single person in here does something in business. You know, I don't care if you're an architect or a trash man or you know or a grocery bagger. You know, anybody like that, they all have access to something in business, whether it's accounting or finance or computer or IT or marketing. You know, everybody has their hands in business somewhere.
Indeed, definitely, and especially in this group, we're all sort of financially minded folks here. Well, Jordan, this has been amazing, sir. Thank you so much. I want to again wrap it up really quick. Just to summarize, it's going to be a while before this happens, where any of this takes place. It's likely not going to affect most of the people here due to the threshold being dependent on each other. Again, that means you have to do X amount of sales, and they have to total in a certain value. However, we will probably see the effects of this spill over in the form of higher fees. Those are the big things to take away from this. But it's going to take time. We could probably expect to be upwards of a couple of years before any of this really hits us. Jordan, thank you so much, man. I do want to close out. We talked about this for the cast, but I want to see if you have a speculation pick for us since you're first time on the cast.
Sure. So, real quick, just to answer Sean Johnson. Yeah, I am going to be starting to write
Yes.
for Quiet Speculation. My first article will be coming out. Will be coming out soon. I actually just finished up the revisions and submitted it to review. But I'm really excited for you guys to read it. Just because I kind of feel like I kind of have more of a wacky personality when it comes to reading instead of hearing me, which, you know, I love to do the podcast as well. But my writing, I really feel like I try and be as creative as possible. Anyway, to answer your question, my pick, this is going to blow you guys away and you guys are probably going to laugh at me, but my pick is going to be the best creature ever printed. I actually think Tarmogoyf is really cheap right now. I know it's a really weird
Okay.
speculation, but there was a time when people were paying 125, 150, 175 for Tarmogoyf. You know, and as more and more creatures are printed, you know, they're making creatures better, yes, but you know, sometimes a 2-mana 4/5 or a 2-mana 5/6 just wins you the game. I mean, it might not be fancy, but it's easy. You know, and if there's a time when, you know, you're playing in Legacy, you know, or you're sitting down at the table and, you know, you're getting, you know, pinged for two from, you know, Deathrite Shaman every turn, or, you know, you're taking two damage from little 1/1 Thopters, you know, every turn. That's just giving you more and more time. Whereas with Tarmogoyf, it just puts you on a shorter clock. So I really think that I really think that it's underrated as far as price wise goes. I think that most people kind of just have their copy now. now, but it's done being reprinted. They've reprinted, you know, the crap out of it in every single modern master set. And, you know, even further, if you want to look at the foil prices, you know, the regular ones are sitting at around between 75 and 80, which I think is a little cheap. I think they'll go up to probably around 120, 130. But the foil ones are sitting at like 120, 130. You know, just after that last eBay coupon, I snagged one for under $100, you know, and that's a foil one. And the foil one has a very, very low spread compared to the regular one. So I'm usually not a big fan of foils. Sometimes they are hard to move. You know, why would anyone want a foil Tamagoyf when a normal one's going to do the exact same thing? But as far as price-wise goes, I think that would be the next thing that goes up. I don't think they printed as much of Modern Masters, the original one, in 2013 as people think. I don't think there's as much sealed product out there. And I think the foil one is will be the first one to jump.
Well, Jordan, if we see a buyout on Tarmogoyf, we now know you're responsible.
Yeah, and it's not because I don't. It's more just about the game, you know, which is why we're all in. We're all in here to have fun or to pad our wallet or for whatever reason. But when you look at finance, usually people don't start from the top. You know, they look at the smaller cards. They look at the cards that are $1, $2. They want those cards to spike to $8 or $10. Well, I'm going to start from the exact opposite. I'm going to start from the top. I'm going to start from the best creature ever printed and go there.
Love it. All right, guys. Jordan's on Tarmogoyf. Papa, you can add a line item for Jordan for Tarmogoyf. Jordan, thank you so much, man. This has been awesome, and it clarified a ton for everybody. Like I said, nobody here was an expert. We weren't exactly sure about what was happening, and this has just been a huge conversation and really means a lot. So thanks for coming on. We'll definitely have a follow-up with you. Jordan, where can people find you on the internet where they can reach out and ask you any questions one-to-one?
Yeah, sure. So I'm definitely most active on Twitter. So it's just my username as below, which is just at Jordan754. You know, always feel free to send me tweets or direct messages. I would much rather love to talk to you magic folk than talk to all my clients, because they're boring and you guys are way more fun.
All right, guys. You can find me at @the_Tark on Twitter. I help out the folks over at the MTG Finance Central Facebook page. Check them out over there. And as always, you can find me in the QS Discord. Jordan, thanks again, man. This has been great. And that's it, guys. We'll talk later. See you guys next week.
Thanks, guys.